Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black, tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. No place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex, irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from the Ninth Circle of Hell, otherwise known as I-495, the Capitol Beltway around Washington, D.C.
This is Tex, broadcasting from high above Houston in the Crystal Cathedral. Happy to be here this evening and shed some lights on the darkness before us. Rex, let me throw it back over to you and let me see if you've had any thoughts about the clusterfuck that is the current election and where we're headed.
Well, it's interesting you should call it a clusterfuck, Dex, because that's exactly what it is. And what's amazing to me is the corporate-controlled media. And when people say, what do you mean corporate-controlled media? I mean that there are five corporations probably owned by three banks that own 95% of all media outlets in this country. And they're selling you on this false delusion that there's somehow an actual race for the presidency going on, as if this severely conservative Mitt Romney and this extremely liberal Barack Obama are really all that different, and there's somehow this contest, and you've got to pick your side, and people are all impassioned and excited about it, and some of them want a Marxist country, and others of them want to restore the free markets, and it's this real powerful battle, and there's these debates that are just so contentious, and it shows the stark differences, and the country's never been more polarized than ever. Bullshit. Okay, now we might not, you know, as voters, we might be polarized. But the political elite, they're not. They've never, ever been closer. And it's evident by the fact that we've got an illegitimate incumbent candidate from the Democrats. And I say illegitimate because Barack Hussein Obama was born, allegedly, and this is what he states himself, and it's what's also on his birth certificates, whether you believe they're valid or not, that he was born the son of a British subject, which is in contravention of the definition of natural-born citizen, whereby both of your parents must be American citizens at the time of your birth. So basically, we fought a war of independence against the British crown, and here we are 225 years later, and we've put a British subject in the highest office in the land. That doesn't make any sense. Two, Mitt Romney, who was a Democrat until, 1994, who shares nothing in common with conservative values, had to steal the nomination despite the duly appointed delegates, duly elected delegates, and the Republican base basically disdaining him. They stole the election for him and are now running him as a severe conservative, and they're running Obama as a liberal, when in fact neither one of them is conservative or liberal. They're both corporatist Keynesians who work for the elite bankers who are running this country into the ground. And they're about to wipe out our currency and send us down the shithole while we cheer for one guy and deride the other guy as if it's a football game. And that's what's happening. And frankly, I'm getting just completely tired of the bullshit. Why won't people wake up? If you're listening to this show, I know you're awake. And Tex, I could probably rant for hours and aggravate people, so why don't I throw it to you? And it looks like we've already got a caller, so let's get our intros in, and then we'll see who's on the line.
Okay, well, I think you were doing a great job getting everyone riled up. And so I just want to say I've been, you know, digging around on a few things. actually had to rewatch. Oh dear God, did I? Yes, the vice presidential debate.
Are you okay? Sort of are you all right? Are you all right?
I don't know, man. I don't know. Why do I got to do this stuff? Why? Why does this have to happen to me? But you know, anyway, I try to dig out some things. Hopefully, things that you'll find interesting anyway, and you know, that may let you understand a bit how the debate went. Of course, you already have your own predisposed opinion as to how you think the debate went, so just maybe go over a few other things and then see how they tied into the presidential debate that came earlier. But who do we have on the line?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see who we got on the line here. Let's see. 702, you are live. If you just want to listen, let me know you want to listen. I'll remute your mic. Otherwise, let us know who you are and what's on your mind. 702. Area code 702. Or you are live, so what's on your mind? Anybody there? Hello.
Very interesting.
Hello, Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland. All right, well, I guess they just want to listen, so we'll remute them. Maybe we'll check back with them in a little while. All I got to say is, you know, there's a whole bunch of dials and consoles on my Blog Talk Radio, you know, doohickey here, and some of them go to 11. And you know what happens when things go to 11.
Yes, exactly. Well, Rex, I just want to jump in and say that something that's kind of been of interest to me was that, you know, who is it who started this Mitt Romney is the most electable BS, right? How did this rhino get jammed down our throat? Why did it get picked up this way? Okay, so I went back in the Wayback Machine. And I discovered that long about, now you may not be too surprised by this, but long about, this is January 2nd of 2011. So, you know, this was good, almost coming up on 2 years ago, January 2nd of 2011. David Gregory was doing an interview on Meet the Press. And he happened to be interviewing Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, a state which Newt Gingrich won.
I used to like her. I used to like her, but then she started to piss me off. I'm sorry, continue, go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. She was good for a while. Very photogenic. Anyway, so Mr. Gregory, so they go through a whole bunch of crap that nobody cares about. And Gregory says, before I let you go, Senator, do you have a candidate yet for a Republican candidate in 2012? And Senator Graham says, yeah, the most electable conservative. Who do you think, whoever that is, Graham says. Gregory says, who's the leading contender in your mind? Senator Graham, probably Romney. Romney has got his problems as a candidate, but so does everyone else. But it's a changing environment, and the one thing you've got to prove to the people of South Carolina not only that you're a conservative, but you carry the day. That's why we need to be talking about immigration and energy policy as a party. The one issue we haven't talked about that needs to be talked about is $4 a gallon gas is coming, and we've done nothing to become energy independent. You know who did talk about that? A guy by the name of Newt Gingrich. So he says that I'm for the most electable conservative, and he said it's probably Romney, right? But he admits Romney has his problems as a candidate. Well, he sure as shit does. He's got serious problems as a nominee, too. Fortunately, if you like douchebag sellouts, Republicans, currently it's looking like Barack Obama has bigger problems as a Democrat nominee. There's just a little civil war brewing in the, well, within the administration between the White House and the Secretary of State,
mm-hmm.
or the Department of State. So that's never good. And now they're playing a blame game where Obama is trying to foist the blame onto Hillary Clinton, and that's going to hurt her 2016 chances. So, you know, they're considering, well, why don't we just screw his chances at reelection, right? So, you know, there you go. It's a race to the bottom, everyone. This is what America has come to. You know, all your years of hard work and believing in the country have come down to who's the crappiest candidate. thing I wanted to note, and this goes back to some, you know, the research that I did back to 2012, so I'm just going to mention this. And back to 2010. So this is an interview. This is, again, Meet the Press. Okay, so this is January 2nd of 2011. All right? So the interview, this is also January 2nd. So this is the same show. So they have, they're talking with David Brooks, E.J. Dionne, Stephen Carter, and Caddy Kay from the BBC, apparently Pat Toomey or something. Okay, so anyway, so Gregory comes back and he turns it to David Brooks. He says, how do you see the Republican field shaping up? And so Brooks says, well, Ron Brownstein in the National Journal had the best way to formulate the field, which is it's divided between the managers and the populists. Okay, that's good. The populists are going to be us, and the managers are going to be the Karl Roves. So the managers are guys like Mitt Romney and Mitch Daniels, who are sort of elitist types, if you want to put it that way, though that's unfair, but who manage well, who are good managers. Then the populists, the Palins, the Gingriches, and the Huckabees. And that's the sort of division. I happen to think the Republican Party is still a manager party, and that'll lean more towards that way. And then, interestingly, Gregory says, how conservative can a nominee be in a post-Bush era and still be electable? Does the party choose an insider with Washington credentials like Senator John Thune or an outsider like Sarah Palin, blah, blah? But the interesting thing is that the insiders had it from early on that they thought that George Bush had discredited conservatism when actually what he did was adopt liberalism, calling it compassionate conservatism. Compassion, I guess, is a nod to the bleeding heart that liberals are supposed to have, even though usually what liberals end up with are bleeding streets from all the people that get killed when their socialist policies aren't going exactly their way. And so as a result of Bush's bleeding heart conservatism that didn't work, how can people still be conservatives? So this essentially is how we got set up to where we are today. And why we have this wretched candidate named Mitt Romney, who, you know, I'll be honest, he could win this thing, but only because Obama is so wretched himself as a president in terms of his performance, but also as a candidate. So really it's coming down to who Americans disdain the most. But at the end of the day, you read through these debates, and if you get down to the details, they don't disagree. I mean, that's the problem. There's not a lot of disagreement there.
What details? They don't give me any details. They give me platitudes and generalizations. And anytime they get pinned down on any detail, which never happens during the show, that only happens in an off-the-cuff comment later, they're pretty much identical. I mean, both of them have had, hot mic incidents, and people just seem to kind of blow it over. If he's your guy, you'll look past it, and if he's not your guy, you'll jump on it. And either way, I think what you're saying is absolutely right. It's basically which one of these guys do voters hate the most, and the other guy will win. There is nothing for. I mean, no one's voting for Obama, no one's voting for Mitt Romney. It's pretty much, you know, which guy do you hate the most, and you'll vote for the other guy, which is why I don't understand why people don't just opt out. You know, because if you keep voting for the lesser of two evils, when will you get lesser evil? I mean, we've been voting for the lesser of two evils now for near on four decades after Reagan. And the only thing we've got...
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? Where's the real pretty shit now, man?
It's real pretty shit.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
Well, let me tell you something. So, you know, thumbing through this vice presidential debate here, I would highly recommend watching it because it's better if you watch it. It's a nightmare if you have to read it. But, you know, they always say, well, O'Biden, he was making all these faces and everything. And that, well, he definitely lost the debate on style. Well, there's no points for style. You know, I don't like the cut of his jib. I don't like the way he wore his tie, you know. You win the things on substance, you know. Of course, maybe I'm old-fashioned and, you know, no, it comes down to style. And did you notice how Mitt Romney, he never turned from Barack Obama? Oh, holy shit. You know, he can strike a pose and hold it for like an hour and a half. I guess he could be president. I mean, what are we electing, a mannequin, or are we electing a president? But anyway,
well, he is a mannequin.
Yes. A mannequin piss. Anyway, he So this is what happens if you get these rhinos in and they're on your ticket. They destroy the brand, because here we have in the vice presidential debate, this is Joe Biden talking after a very bizarre exchange, let's just say. And then he comes roundabout back from crazy land, and he says, and by the way, they talk about this great recession as if it fell out of the sky, like, oh my goodness, where did it come from? It came from this man voting to put two wars on a credit card. Okay? And at the same time put a prescription drug benefit on the credit card, a $1 trillion tax cut for a very wealthy. I was there. I voted against him. I said, no, we can't afford that. Now all of a sudden these guys are so seized up with the concern about the debt that they created. See what I'm saying? This is what happens when you let these guys in. They fly your flag, they wear your jersey, and they go and they betray everything that you stand for and that they say that they stand for. Read my lips, no new taxes. And then you're stuck there holding the bag for them with cognitive dissonance, trying to come up with a reason why you should vote for them. And the reason is, well, Barack Obama is so much worse that maybe we can hold Mitt Romney to account. How the hell are you going to hold Mitt Romney to account when Rush Limbaugh, Mark Levin, Sean Hannity, all those guys, all throughout this election, they didn't hold Mitt Romney to account. They didn't hold up his record. They said he's conservative and he's the most electable. Conservative and the most electable, you know. Rush Limbaugh likes to go on about Lindsey Grahamnesty. Here he is echoing Lindsey Grahamnesty years later, talking about how he doesn't like him and all this kind of stuff on the radio, but he just adopted whole cloth what Lindsey Graham was saying January 2011. What was Limbaugh saying January 2011? Talking about getting real conservatives in there and all that kind of stuff. Now all of a sudden he's pretending Mitt Romney's a real conservative? You know, they're not going to hold him to account. They're going to go out there and rah-rah for the damn team, like they always do.
Well, because
you know
those guys...
You're going to be stuck with another fucking rhino, and come 2014, if this idiot gets in office, you're going to have to go out there and try to explain how Mitt Romney's rhino horse shit is actually conservative. And you know what? I'm just not doing it anymore. I'm not.
Yeah, well, Tex, you might not be willing to do it because you've got principles, but Sean Hannity and Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and all those other jerk-offs, they're going to talk Republican. Now, they might, you know, pretend to hold Mitt Romney's feet to the fire on this minor rhetorical issue or that minor rhetorical issue. But, you know, these guys are owned by Clear Channel, which is owned by Bain. You know, and again, it comes down to the fact that there is no true journalism in this country anymore. You know who actually said that first? It was that insipid, moronic cheerleader, Sean Hannity. He said, journalism's dead in America. You know, yeah, dickhead, and you're the reason it's dead. You know, he wants to blame all the morons on the left. Well, I mean, those guys are clearly moronic. But what about you, you stupid cheerleader? You're out here trying to tell me that, you know, this process is fair. And, well, I like Ron Paul, and I agree with him about a lot of things, but we just disagree on foreign policy. Really, really, Sean? You tell me that you're a conservative first and a Republican second? Where the fuck do you disagree with Ron Paul on foreign policy? Is it on non-interventionism? Is it on not going into conflicts where you don't know who the bad guys or the good guys are? Is it when you don't know if your intervention is going to destabilize the country and make it actually more dangerous? Is it when you have no idea exactly what effect it'll have on other nations? I mean, is it when it's going to cost your people blood and treasure that we don't have? When is it exactly that you have a problem with Ron Paul's foreign policy? See, the thing is that somehow, somewhere along the line, the Republican conservative policy of non-interventionism, except when it's absolutely necessary. For example, a socialist dictatorship is taking hold down south in an oil-producing nation that seems to be friendly with regimes we don't like. That's right here in our hemisphere in Venezuela. How about we invade that country? What the hell are we doing in Iraq and Afghanistan? You know, I think Venezuela is a bigger problem. I think our Mexican border is a bigger problem. You know, that's not intervening in foreign nations. That's simply watching out for your own ass because these people are in your backyard. You know, how come we're not doing anything down there, but we're doing all sorts of stuff wherever there are natural resources that banks probably want to trade and make interest off? You know, our military is not the private domination force of a few bankers.
It is the defense force of these United States. Maybe we should elect people who will treat it that way, as opposed to electing shills for the private bankers who use us to secure their holdings overseas. That's a conservative principle, Mr. Hannity. You're a fucking moron. And that's true for all of the media. So they're giving us this line that you said apparently originated with Lindsay Lightness Loafers Graham, that Romney's the most conservative and the most electable. Now, let's talk about that. I'm going to throw it back to you, Tex, but I'd like to know, what exactly is fucking electable about this dipshit? And number two, name one thing other than possibly his suit and his shoe shine that's fucking conservative about Mitt Romney. All yours.
Well, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. There isn't anything except that, you know, like another president from, you know, 100 years ago or nearly 100 years ago, he looks like a president, right? So he must be, although he doesn't look like a president to me. He's like a fucking wimp, man. You remember when George Bush had, like, the wimp factor thing going on? This guy's a wimp, man. I don't like him. And you know what? He doesn't even have policies. He just makes shit up. Let's be honest. As he's running, he just makes up whatever he has to say in order to get in office. And then when he is in office, he does whatever the hell he wants. There's no accountability. All the records are destroyed. We always know this one, right? And then he splits office because no one wants to have him back, okay? And guess what? This time he's going to do it. He's going to be wearing your jersey. He's going to be in the White House. And do you really want to cheapen your brand that way? I mean, this guy, maybe he could get elected this time because Obama sucks. You think he could get reelected? I mean, he doesn't even talk about what he did in Massachusetts. You know, I mean, that's just completely gone. So, you know, I don't know why you want this guy. And I'm gonna pull something here. This came out of the vice presidential debate, which is
I watched that show. I watched that show. It was boring.
It sucked. Should have watched Dancing with the Stars. Anyway, it says Representative Ryan, Mitt Romney was governor of Massachusetts, where 87% of the legislature he served with were Democrats. He didn't demonize them. He didn't demagogue them. Yeah, no shit, because he's one of them. He met with those party leaders every week. He reached across the aisle. He didn't compromise principles. And Biden interjects. And you saw what happened. And Ryan says he found common ground, and he balanced the budget. Vice President Biden, you saw that? If he did such a great job in Massachusetts, why isn't he even contesting Massachusetts, you know, basically in this election, right? The people in Massachusetts don't like Mitt Romney. They're not going to vote. This is like their governor. They don't care about this guy, you know, but all of a sudden we wrap him up. It's like, look, you want it to be true, so you make it true, you know? Like if you meet a woman or something, you know, and you really love her and all this kind of stuff, you start projecting all this stuff onto her, right? It's like your Snow White suit, right? She must be Snow White, and everything that I want, she is, whether she is or not. You delude yourself, you blind yourself, but particularly the younger you are, you blind yourself, you know, to what this person's really like. And then you get into a situation and find out, oh, wait, that wasn't true at all, right? Well, it's the same thing with Mitt Romney. Well, I hate Obama so much, I'm just going to go to Mitt Romney because the Republican Party is so much better because we're the party of limited government and all this kind of stuff. And, the whole litany of things that we rattle off and that we've been fighting for years. But the problem is Romney's not that guy. And that's the problem that I have. Look, I don't want to see Barack Obama in the White House or Joe Biden or any of these guys. I'm pointing to a larger problem that this country has, which is that we have two parties and there isn't a shit spit of difference between the two of them. That's not to say that there aren't people in the Republican Party that actually can draw the contrast and are worth voting for. The problem is the people in our party leadership are selling us out because they're inside the Beltway. They support government, ever-encroaching, enlarging government because they get more and more money out of it.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they don't care.
That's frightening.
I mean, Karl Rove's America Crossroads, how much money does that fucking thing have? Like billions, hundreds of billions of freaking dollars. You think he cares about you? I mean, Karl Rove's pack is larger than the gross domestic product of a lot of countries in the world. You think he's listening to you? You know, and that's why he's going for Mitt Romney, because Mitt Romney's in on the damn thing, too, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know. What are we going
to
do?
Well, Tex, it's easy for Romney not to compromise his principles. He doesn't fucking have any. If you don't have any principles, then it's very, you don't compromise them. You're going to do whatever it takes. You're going to say whatever it takes to get whatever position you're looking for, and then you're going to do whatever the hell you want to do with it, or whatever the hell you were hired to do with it. Without any regard for how you got there. You know, I'm a severe conservative. Actually, I'm a progressive Republican. I don't want to go back to Reagan Bush. As I get older, Reagan seems to make more sense. Dude, I mean, when you were running for senator, Reagan didn't make any sense to you. How are you a Republican? I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. It's absolutely insane. This guy lies to your face. He spits on your principles. He's completely the most flexible candidate. He'll be whatever the hell you want to be. And the only reason that anybody even, you know, pretends to like him is because they hate Barack Obama. Well, if you despise Obama so much, why are you going to replace him with a guy who stands to do the same exact policies that are in place now? There's hardly anything of import with which he disagrees with Barack Obama. But the problem is that this, instead of being a radical Marxist who hung out with Bill Ayers and Jeremiah Wright, whose dad was a Kenyan communist, all these problems, you've got a nice white Brooks Brothers suit, conservative-looking guy with a nice family who is in your party, and he's in the country club Republican crowd, so everything looks like it's going to be A-OK again. And you're going to still be stuck with 1021 and 1023 of NDAA. You're still going to be stuck with Ben Bernanke. You're not going to peer into anything that the Federal Reserve has done. You're still going to have the president with a kill list with mechanical drones. You are still going to have foreign wars that we can't afford in both blood and treasure, and possibly even more of them. Nothing's going to change. It's all going to continue to get worse.
Right. Let me tell you something. Speaking of having no policies, okay, so this is Mitt Romney's big foreign policy speech where he was talking about Afghanistan. I want to talk a little bit about this issue. He says that regarding Afghanistan, I will evaluate the conditions on the ground and weigh the best advice of our military commanders, and I will affirm that my duty is not to my political prospects but to the security of the nation. Oh, wow. Really? He'll evaluate the condition. You haven't done this already. You don't have a sense of what's going on in Afghanistan, whether or not that's like a complete, you know, shit fuck, or, you know, whether or not that's awesome and we should keep doing it. I mean, he's going to go talk to the military commanders. I mean, you're buying a pig in a poke, okay? So then I want to say something. I'm going to come back to his foreign policy speech here in a little bit, okay? So, God, where should I start with this one? Okay, so in the Biden-Ryan debate, okay, so this is actually the more substantive debate. They talk about the issue of Afghanistan, and Raddatz, who is, moderating, says, why not leave now? What more can we accomplish, really? Is it worth more American lives? And Ryan says, we don't want to lose the gains we've got. Okay, I'm not feeling a lot of gains, but we want to make sure that the Taliban does not come back and give al-Qaeda safe haven. Hey, I got an idea. If they give al-Qaeda safe haven, let's just shoot a bunch of tomahawks over there and blow that safe haven up, and then, you know, we're kind of pretty far away. We should
imagine that.
get back on the ship, nuke the site from orbit. That's what I say. But anyway, then he says, this is in Paul Ryan's first response. So Biden hasn't even spoken yet, and he concludes with, but we want to see the 2014 transition be successful, and that means we want to make sure our commanders have what they need to make sure that it's successful so that this does not once again become a launching pad for terrorists. Now, the interesting thing about that is he says he wants 2014 to be successful, and this becomes the big bone of contention between Biden and Ryan, which we'll get into, but he adds this caveat, we want to make sure our commanders have what they need to make sure it's successful. Well, what is it? What do they need? You know, Pop-Tarts, Beanie Weenies, they need ammo, they need guns, they need Tomahawk missiles. I mean, he never says, right? So then Biden responds, we went there for one reason, to get those who killed Americans, al-Qaeda, and we have eliminated bin Laden. We've agreed on the gradual drawdown so that we're out of there by the year 2014. We've trained 315,000 people, mostly without incident, but we are leaving. We are leaving in 2014, period, and in the process, we're going to be saving over the next 10 years over $800 billion. We've been in this war for a decade, blah, blah, blah. Ryan says, we don't want to stay, okay? We want to make sure that 2014 is successful. So you see what I'm saying? This is a debate. So they're agreeing, okay? And he goes on to say, we don't want to extend beyond 2014. That's the point we're making, period. Okay, so they agree 2014, let's get the hell out of here. And he says, you know, if it was just this, I feel we would, and then interestingly enough, we would be able to call this a success, but it's not. What we are witnessing as we turn on our television screens these days is the absolute unraveling of the Obama foreign policy. Problems are growing at home, but jobs, blah, blah. You know, problems are growing abroad, but jobs aren't growing here at home. What does that have to do with Afghanistan? He just said he agrees. They said, we're getting the hell out in 2014. He said, we don't want to stay. We want to make sure 2014 is successful. We don't want to extend beyond 2014. That's the point we're making. And then realizing he complete agreement with Biden, he says, we're witnessing the complete unraveling of the Obama foreign policy without, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And then, Rex, this gets down to what the preliminary difference is. Well, not the preliminary, the primary difference is where Ryan says, let me go back. He says, absolutely, we're leaving in 2014. You're saying that's not an absolute. And he says, do you know why we say that? Do you know why we say that? And Biden says, I'd like to know why. And Ryan says, because we don't want to broadcast to our enemies, put a date on your calendar, wait us out, and come back. Okay, well, dude, you just said you're down in 2014. You want to make sure. So you just did that. You just did that. And then in order to pull out, I got news for you guys. You got things called allies, right? So, you know, El Salvador, they actually have some troops over there. I don't know what they're doing. They probably don't know what they're doing. They're just like, no es bueno, but they're over there. And the United States is like, all right, screw this. We're getting out. Well, you can't just leave the El Salvadorans there, right? Like, you know, what the fuck, man? You know, I don't even want to be here. I'm just here as like a token that you've got this big group of allies who are like totally interested in this, you know, piece of shit war that you have. So you kind of got to talk to them. And so Biden says that's a bizarre statement since 49 of our allies signed on to this position, which is pulling out in 2014. So, you know, I wonder what is the level of our disagreements with, you know, our being the Republican disagreement with the Democrat Party. If it comes down to the 2014 drawdown, it's very clear that we are in absolute agreement with them. We being the Republican Party, we're in absolute agreement with them. All we're saying is, hey, we wouldn't have said what the specific date was, even though you have to agree with it, the 49 people. And by the way, if you got 49 people in a room all agreeing to a date, let me tell you that date's going to leak, okay? So you might as well just say what it is, you know? So,
and what difference does it make?
Yeah.
What, the Taliban is going to become emboldened because we're leaving?
Okay. So then we go on. This is how, and this is going to tie back into Romney here. So he says, let me bring some more, okay, because you did so great last time. This is Paul Ryan. He's talking about he met with all these generals because he's such a super important guy. And then he says, so when Admiral Mullen and General Petraeus came to Congress and said, if you pull these people out before the fighting season is at an end. It puts people more at risk. That's the problem. Yes, we drew down 22,000 troops. Sorry, we drew 22,000 troops down last month, but the remaining troops that are there who still have the same mission to prospect counterinsurgency are doing it with fewer people. So Biden responds, we turned it over to the Afghan troops we trained. No one got pulled out that didn't get filled in by trained Afghan personnel. And he's conflating two issues. The fighting season that Petraeus was talking about and Admiral Mullen was the fighting season this spring. That's what he was talking about. So what Biden is saying, so Ryan says, if you pull these people out before the fighting season is at an end, it puts more people at risk, and that's the issue, okay? So what Petraeus was saying is you can't pull them out right now this spring because the fighting season is starting and these people are going to be out wandering around. So that's a problem, right? So Biden says he was talking specifically about this spring being spring 2012. Ryan says the calendar works the same every year, spring, summer, and fall. It's warm or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we understand it's warm in the summer and spring, but the man was speaking of a specific circumstance. Okay. Anyway, but Biden says, so then he says, they're still fighting us. This is Ryan. They're coming over the passes. They're still coming over into Zabul or into Karnar, all these areas, but we're sending fewer people over to the front to fight them. And Biden says, that's right, because that's the Afghan responsibility. We've trained them. Now, so you think there's a difference where Ryan wants to leave the troops in. Like if the Romney-Ryan ticket, ask yourself this, if the Romney-Ryan ticket is down with 2014 and getting out by 2014, why are they not down with starting to get people out now? Are we all of a sudden going to airlift out, you know, 60, 80,000 people in a day? We're just, boom, we're gone? I mean, do we have that kind of airlift capability, or do you not have to do it in stages? And Biden is saying that we turned it over to the Afghans. Now, this is not to point out, like, you know, Joe Biden's some kind of freaking foreign policy genius, but rather to point out the fact that the two parties are in large part, well, actually are in total agreement on what our policy should be in Afghanistan, except that they shouldn't have said the specific date, even though we all would have figured out what it was because they had to go tell us 49 different nations. But Biden says we pull these 22,000 troops out and we replace them with Afghans, okay? And so this is Mitt Romney's speech at VMI on foreign policy, and he says, and in Afghanistan, I will pursue a real and successful transition to Afghan security forces by the end of 2014. That's Mitt Romney.
Wow.
So what is the difference between the Romney-Ryan ticket and the Obama-Biden ticket on Afghanistan?
I guess whichever one is speaking first or second. I mean, otherwise they're exactly the same. I mean, the fundamental problem with this whole stupid argument is that they're tinkering around the edges, even though they agree on just about everything. The question that I have for you, first of all, is what are a bunch of Afghans going to do when the Taliban, emboldened by the Muslims in Waziristan, comes coming back? And no matter how much training you give them, will they be able to actually win that battle? And do we really care one way or the other if they're killing each other? But the fundamental problem with this is, didn't we train Afghanis before and it didn't work out so well? I mean, a Saudi named Osama bin Laden and put him in charge of Afghani forces in Afghanistan and equip them with weapons and train them to fight the Soviets, and then they turn around and fight us after the Soviet Union collapses? And these 315,000 Afghans that we've trained in our security protocols and our fighting methods, are they going to suddenly fall in love with us and not turn on us at some point in the future? I mean, why are we giving this shit away? Who in their right mind trains foreigners who might turn around to kill them how to kill them? It's just dumb. We should have gone in there, killed bin Laden, killed al-Qaeda, killed any Taliban that were harboring them, and then left. And the problem is their country would be a shithole, right? Hey, guess what? It was a shithole before we got there. Sorry.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing, what are they going to do after we leave? I don't know. Who gives a shit, right? I mean, I'll be honest. Who cares? Whatever. I mean, how many countries in the world? Oh, this is so terrible. How could you not care? I don't know. I don't care, right? There's 7 billion people on the planet. Freaking got to care about every one of them. Who's caring about me? You know, who's caring about the United States of America? Who's tending the flames over here, you know? No one. You know, you freaking care about what goes on in the Seychelles, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, who's giving a shit about that? You know, I don't know. But I don't. You don't. But all of a sudden, because it's Afghanistan, you got people over there dying. You're like, oh, I care. You know, we really got to fix that. You can't fix it, man. You can't.
We don't care about what's going on in Darfur. We don't care about the basic civil war going on in Sri Lanka. I mean, look, the fact is, do you care? Yes, you care. These are fellow human beings. Can you do something about every single conflict on the planet? No, you cannot. What you can do is lead by example and tell them, hey, shitheads, look at how we do things over here. People have jobs. People can raise their kids in a nice neighborhood. People have some money in their pocket to go out on the weekend. They have some they have some money which they can support their local church or mosque or synagogue. Hey, this is pretty nice. Maybe you guys would like some of this. We can show you how to do it. You know, just come over here, trade with us, and we'll show you how to do things, and you guys can have that too. But we can't fix it for you.
And let's be honest, how do we get here? How did, like, oh my God, now we got to fight the Taliban? We didn't give a shit about the Taliban. I mean, let's be honest. Taliban built up for years. They never cared, mm-hmm. never came up, nobody gave a shit. And then, you know, all of a sudden Al-Qaeda's there, and then the intelligence community is like, hey, it's freaking Al-Qaeda and everything. But we didn't do anything about it, right? I mean, look, what happened was Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan back in 79 or whatever, and that was the thing that made Carter realize, oh, God, I guess, you know, being a peacenik, it turns out that doesn't actually make foreign governments love you. Yeah. You know, gee, I guess they don't respect you or your use of military power or they're afraid of you. See, this gets back to something I said about diplomacy. Everybody thinks diplomacy is sit down, have a tea, and see who can out-nice each other. Oh, I find it so delightful what you just said. That's not diplomacy. That's freaking blowjobs. That's what that is, okay? Diplomacy is going up to the guy and saying, hey, look, I know how you want to go invade this country. I know how you want to assert sovereignty over this island or how you want to take over this bank or company or whatever the heck it is you do. But here's the problem. I have a fire-breathing dragon at home right now that is so upset about what you're doing that if you do that, that fire-breathing dragon is going to come burn flames all over this place and kill everything in its path. So maybe you don't want to do that. That's diplomacy. It's called being clear. Like, we're not going to let you do that, and here are the consequences. And then the other guy says, oh, well, you can't do that because I have a Godzilla, and my Godzilla, okay, so you got a Godzilla. So maybe your Godzilla and my fire-breathing dragon, maybe they don't want to fight, right? So maybe you shouldn't do that. Well, if we can't do that, then we would like to do this. Okay, well, if you do that, we would like to do this. And you go to the bargaining table, right? And you start switching stuff up. That's what diplomacy is. It's not being nice. This is the problem the Democrats have, that Obama has, which is, oh, well, I'll just go out and force a personality, and I'll be their friend, and I'll read Chavez's book and all this kind of crap. Yeah, that's not how you get respect, because you're not being clear. You are being clear and communicating that you're completely weak and venal and will cave into anything because you're too interested in demonstrating that you understand their point of view and are willing to accommodate their point of view and not stand up for your own. That's
basically, you're signaling to them that you're a pussy, and so the natives are going to get restless. Okay, what happened to peace through strength? You can have peace if everybody knows that you are at any moment, if they cross the line, prepared to kick their asses. That's the power behind it. And the thing is, they can have a Godzilla and a dragon or whatever, but we've got a Hulk. His name's Newt Gingrich. His name's Ron Paul. These are the kind of men who would be able to stand up to foreign despots with our strength. Ron Paul had the support of 90% of our veterans because they know that his message of liberty is what makes their jobs worthwhile. Because instead of going over to nation-building foreign countries, they would actually be able to defend the homeland from invasion. And that's the whole point. Because right now we've weakened. We've spread the force so thin, and we've weakened our dollar so much that we have never been more in danger of being invaded than we are now, thanks to the war policies of Bill Clinton and George W. Bush and the biggest warmonger of them all, Barack Hussein Obama. Where's that hopey changey shit that people voted for? Okay,
I just want to bring it home on that conversation because it was going somewhere. So Soviet Union invades Afghanistan, right? And so they're there. So Reagan gets elected and we get involved in Afghanistan to roll back the Soviet advance, right? Because they're always looking for a warm water port, and basically they're trying to go through Afghanistan and all this kind of stuff. So we help out the Mujahideen, and we managed to get them thrown out. We give them a bunch of money. They were coming back and forth to Washington, D.C. There's still a very nice Afghan restaurant in Washington, D.C. that was created by the Mujahideen back in the day. Good food. But then we're done, right? We sold a bunch of Stinger missiles, some of which we can't account for, but I'm sure they've all been detonated by now. But you know, so we leave, right? And then as we leave, Pakistan starts, you know, getting bored. And so their intelligence service begin setting up the Taliban to take over. And that's what they did. They manipulated the Taliban, or they funded them, manipulated them. But they funded them to take over the country, and they did that, A, to expand their sphere of influence, because Pakistan is right up against their mortal enemy, India. And also they've got this big struggle going on in Kashmir, and Afghanistan has borders on that. And there's, you know, some level of whittling away that you could do up there if you had that. But anyway, you know, self-aggrandizement of your state. So in the process, how did we get here by being venal again? Well, Osama bin Laden was set up in the Sudan, okay? So then remember when we bombed the baby milk factory in Sudan, which wasn't. but bin Laden then got on a jet and started flying to Afghanistan, another failed state that was put up with him. And Clinton had an opportunity, and he was told that this plane is coming up, we shoot the plane down and we get rid of the guy. And Clinton said no. Because, like, we don't assassinate foreign leaders.
Just okay. American citizens.
Yeah. If you're an American citizen, you can kiss your ass goodbye. You know, that's done. But if you're head of a terrorist organization that's declared war on America, apparently now you're some sort of head of state. And so they didn't kill him, and they let him set it up. And what did we do during that time, right? Nothing. That was, if I recall correctly, that was 1998 that bin Laden went over there. And it was 3 years later that 9/11 happened. So could have nipped it in the bud, but nah, you know, going to show our respect, be a nice guy. And now we've been in Afghanistan for 10 freaking years. Anyway, we got to call
And her. We do. We keep wondering, you know, why they keep doing things we don't want them to do and the Constitution doesn't permit them to do, and not doing the things that the Constitution demands that they do that we want them to do. You wonder why you're nation building in some shithole in Afghanistan while the southern border on Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, and California is a sieve. Well, clearly, if they're idiots and they're incompetent, sometimes they'll actually get it right. The fact that they're constantly doing it wrong, no matter which party is in power, no matter which dickhead you voted for, indicates that something else is at play here, that there is an agenda that they don't want you to know about. They want you to stay asleep and keep going rah, rah, rah for the red team or the blue team, and the agenda just rolls on. If you don't wake up soon, you're going to get a very rude awakening when this shit comes crumbling or down around your ears and you stand up and you go, well, why didn't anybody tell me this was going to happen? We could have done something about it. Do something about it now and quit your yipping and yapping about Obama's so bad we're going to get rid of him by voting for Romney. Romney is terrible. Obama is terrible. Stop playing the game. Restore your country to its proper foundation or you're going to lose
policies.
It.
The same policies. Obama has the same policies. The foreign policy is the same. Democratizing the Middle East, that was a George Bush thing, right? But guess what's happening in the Middle East right now? Now it's like, oh, my God, the Muslim Brotherhood's taking over. Yeah, well, who do you think the opposition was in you know, in these countries when you were advocating this? That's who it is, right? Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, anyway, but now it's Obama, so you're against it. But when it was Bush, you were for it. You know, I'm sick of you people. You're nothing but a bunch of fickle mushheads, you know? And
hey,
then, like, Obamacare, you hate Obamacare, but, you know, Mitt Romney built that. And now you're like, if I don't vote for Mitt Romney, now I'm the biggest jerk off in the world. Screw you people. That's what I'm saying. Anyway, who's the caller?
Tex, I got a question. Will the Democrats become anti-war again if Romney beats Obama? Because aren't they always the anti-war party, you know? George Bush is killing babies. Okay, but when Obama does it, or when Obama kills American citizens, well, Obama's such a nice president. We have to reelect him because he's done such wonderful things. I mean, you know, the morons, there's just as many morons on the other side. their
Bush
shit's
died.
Not,
people died, right?
Yeah. Now, on the other side, it's not as clear as the battle that we've got on our side because guess what? Their party got taken over in 1968, okay? So
yeah.
So the progressive interests have been entrenched in the Democratic Party for a long time, and those people are just all too far gone. Our party, let's see. Oh, in 1980,
We ran and won with Ronald Reagan. We did it again in 84. In 1994, we got the majority with Gingrich. Okay, so our party's takeover has taken a lot longer. It's much more recent. And it doesn't have to happen. You know, the Ron Paul Liberty Movement controls 11 Republican states. And they're not going anywhere. This is the future of a conservative Republican Party if the rest of you so-called conservatives actually want it. But if you keep electing rhinos, you keep supporting liberal Democrats in your party, it's gone. And people will flee to those third parties, as we're doing on the top of the ticket in this election, because Mitt Romney is no friend of mine. Mitt Romney is no friend of conservatism. Mitt Romney, well, he's basically a piece of shit. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. 646-649-1013. We got this caller from 702. Let's see. 702, if you just want to listen, just tell me I want to listen, and I'll remute you. But if you've got something on your mind, tell us who you are and what you want to chime in on about the election. 702, you are live. Hello, 702. 702? Going once, twice, three times, done. You're muted for the rest of the show. I won't be calling back on you.
Yeah,
all right,
quite the tease.
Yeah, that's fine. Maybe they just want to listen, but I mean, all you do is tell me. But in any event, Tex, the analysis you're giving me of the show, last week's show, was it last week's show? Yeah, because we got another show coming up this week between Romney and what's the other guy's name? Obama. I sometimes forget when I say one, I kind of forget to say the other because what's the difference? I think they're going at it this Tuesday. Yeah, Tuesday.
Yeah.
It's the second Obama-Romney show. Foreign policy,
Obama's getting ready to claw Mitt Romney's eyes out. This is going to be interesting because they're talking about foreign policy, which they're 100% in agreement on. So let's see how this piece of shit works out. This is going to be literally, you know, I'm almost interested, except that it won't be interesting at all, because I'd like to see how they draw the distinction, but they're not going to draw the distinction. They're going to do one of the stupid things that they did in this vice presidential debate, which I'm going to get to. But since we're on foreign policy, I thought I might talk a little bit about Syria and or its geographical size.
Well, sure, Tex, before you do that, though, I just want to remind everybody that the show, the Romney Obama show on foreign policy, is this Tuesday. And I believe it is from 9 p.m. to 10:30 Eastern, and Tex and Rex will be on live at 11 p.m. Eastern time for a post Obama-Romney foreign policy show. I guess we can call it an analysis. All right, back to your point, Tex.
Okay, so So in the midst of this debate, they decide to move on to another war in Syria. Now, this is very important because, you know, it's come down. People are saying that Joe Biden thinks that Syria is geographically larger than Libya. Look, that, you know, I'm not like Joe Biden, okay? Let me just tell you one thing, right? But, you know, as a guy involved in research, you know, you got to sort this shit out, okay? So, right, somebody says this, go figure out what the hell happened. All right, okay, so let's read the full question that we got. So Reddit says, let's move on to the civil war in Syria, where there are estimates that more than 25,000, 30,000 people have now been killed. In March of last year, President Obama explained the military action taken in Libya by saying it was in the national interest. Okay, so President Obama explained the military action taken in Libya by saying it was in the national interest to go in and prevent further massacres from occurring there. So why doesn't the same logic apply in Syria, Vice President Biden? It's a different country. It's a different country, right? It's five times as large geographically. It has one-fifth of the population. That is Libya. One-fifth the population, five times as large geographically. Okay, so let's go back and repeat that question because people, they just, you know, they don't read this stuff, okay? President Obama explained the military action taken in Libya by saying it was in the national interest to go in and prevent further massacres from occurring there. Okay, so she starts off saying Libya, okay? So why doesn't the same logic in Libya apply to Syria? And Biden says it's a different country. It's a different country. Libya is five times as large geographically. He says it. And so now everyone's wondering what it is, okay? But he's saying Libya is five times as large geographically. It has one-fifth the population. That is Libya. See that? That is Libya? That is Libya that I am talking about, is what he said. One-fifth the population, five times as large geographically. Okay, so let's go to the facts and figures, right? So let me tell you something. Syria is 185,000 square miles. Libya is 1.7 million square miles, okay? So if you – Libya is not one-fifth or five times as large as Syria. It literally is almost 10 times as large, right?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nine plus, but you could just call it 10 for the sake of whatever.
Right.
Okay, and the population of Libya is 5.6 million, and the population of Syria is 22 million, okay? So he says one-fifth the population, so he's doing
That's
a mental
close.
Shortcut where he's got 5 million, and he's seeing a population of 22 and something. Sometimes they can round up if it's 22.6. They could round that up to 25, right? See what I'm saying? So
yep.
You could get five out of that. All right, so that's what Biden was saying. Not that I give a crap, but, I mean, you know, people got to pay a bit of attention here. Okay, so then, you know, we go on. We're working hand in glove with the Turks, Jordanians, and Saudis, and all the people who hate this jackass. Okay, let me tell you guys, you know, spoiler alert. All right, here's what's going on. You can't go bomb Iran until you get rid of Syria. And here's the big problem with getting rid of Syria. Not only is it Iran's major ally, but it's also Russia's major ally in the region, or one of their major allies in the region. Russia's other major ally is Iran. So, you know, they're not exactly going to be working with you on this crap, okay? So they're exercising vetoes left and right, you know, both to support Syria and Iran, because kind of really – we're sort of kicking their ass all over the Middle East right now, right? But they don't really like that, but, you know, what are they going to do, right? What can they do about it, right? So then Ryan says, you know, no one is proposing to send troops to Syria, American troops, he says. Okay. Well, someone's proposing to send troops to America. We're just not sending American troops. So those troops are going to be Turkish, and they're already shelling across the border, if you guys pay attention to that. And NATO has already said that they have more than enough military might to defend Turkey if necessary. But, you know, it's Turkey's game to decide when they want to move in, but they'll probably do it covertly, right? And so he goes on and on about what happened to seeing Paul Ryan, about what happened over here. And then he said that by us going to the UN, that bought Bashar Assad time. We always go to the UN, man. We always do, because if you go in by yourself, you know, the whole world shits on you and they say it's this big illegal war. So you always got to go, right? Even Bush went to the UN. I mean, for God's sakes, okay? So they go to the UN. And then he says, we gave Russia veto power over our efforts through the UN, and meanwhile about 30,000 Syrians are dead. Okay, yes. That's because they're on the Security Council. That did happen. But what I want to know is, what is the serious area of disagreement? Is Paul Ryan saying that Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan will not go to the UN to ask for their permission before we go do something in foreign affairs? I'm not saying that we should. What I'm pointing out is all they're doing is complaining that they did these things without advancing a case stating that if they were in office, they actually would be doing something different. And this goes back to the fact that Hand in glove, this is our foreign policy. There's a foreign policy establishment in Washington. All this stuff was agreed after 9/11, and it's just going apace. This is much like during the Cold War, right, where Kennan's long telegram, you know, Mr. X, wrote this thing, and basically, boom, we put our policy in place, and it continued on without disruption for about 25, 30 years, and then sort of the détente came about. And détente came about. Maybe it just happened in the form of a controlled economic collapse of Russia, where they got a whole bunch of bank loans, and, you know, it was a pretty bloodless coup that went on over there. But, you know, anyway.
Yeah, well,
And not, it won't necessarily be bloodless when it happens with a collapsing dollar, because what are you going to replace it with? Who's going to bail us out? No one's bailing us out. You remember, you know, whenever you got a problem, we can flood your economy with dollars. And since it's the global currency and it's the petrodollar, that works. Well, when the dollar collapses, who's going to flood our economy with anything of any value?
This brings up the issue of Iran, right? So we talk about Syria and what's going on. Bashar Assad is gone. Okay, so the Russians already pretty much written them off. Iran, you know, they're praying, they're hoping, they're trying to keep them in there, but, you know, pretty much writing them off. That's not to say the guy couldn't stay on in some extreme circumstance. I mean, the world is governed by chaos, and you never know what exactly could happen. But, you know, pretty much the writing's on the wall for the guy, and he's done. Which gets you down to Iran, and what are we going to do about Iran? Okay, so everyone's saying military strike to get rid of Iran's nuclear weapon. Okay, so reading through the transcript, what Joe Biden is saying throughout this thing is, yes, well, what Paul Ryan is saying is that they're enriching uranium. They're getting it up to 20%. That's a level at which, beyond which you can get a bomb, right? And then, you know, they're going to go nuke Israel. Okay, so that's the thing. And then Joe Biden's response, this back and forth, very tedious, is that, yes, you can get fissile material to make a bomb, but you don't have a weapon, right? You need a bomb, okay? So you got to put, that's the fuel for the bomb, but they don't have a bomb to put it in, right? So, you know, there isn't a weapon, so, you know, this is kind of ridiculous. Now, that's not to say that if Iran has, you know, 20, you know, percent minus, or, you know, or 20% plus enriched uranium, that other nations in the region won't start going for it themselves, which is actually what the crux of the problem is. But, you know, Joe Biden is saying that there's not a delivery mechanism. Let me tell you something. Rockets, not hard to build, but a trigger unit for nuclear device actually is a bit more complicated, but I would not say it's that much more complicated.
Well, it's not like they can't find out from some Pakistani scientist who happens to be a sympathetic Muslim or some rogue Russian scientist. I mean, come on. This information's out there, people.
So what has happened, and this gets back to the issue of, you know, U.S. dollar, kind of come around about that, you know, all of a piece throughout that Chase had a beast in view. So thing is about Iran, you know, we saw this coming, and so we have to do crippling sanctions, okay? So the United States already had, through ILSA, the Iran-Libya Sanctions Act, some pretty devastating economic sanctions on Libya. We even, you may remember this.
Are they crippling? Are they crippling sanctions?
Well, they weren't exactly crippling, but they were hobbling, let's say, at least. I mean, they were... It's not like they didn't have an effect, but, you know, I mean, look at the condition of mankind back in the, you know, Roman era, the Greek era. People can get by with less, you know, and they don't even notice, right, because everybody eventually just adjusts to their situation. That's just human nature, right?
Yeah.
Okay,
yep.
So the deal was, through ILSA and some other sanctions, you're not allowed to, you know, have economic relations with Iran. You can't help out their oil industry, or our oil companies can't, at least. That's not to say other companies internationally don't do that. And we're not allowed to trade with them, but here's the deal. You just bring all your goods to the United Arab Emirates. You sell your stuff there. It's bought by someone else, and someone else transfers it from the UAE to Iran. So that basically is how Iran's been getting by with the sanctions.
Mm-hmm.
So finally... It came down to oil sanctions. Are we going to do oil sanctions on Iran, yes or no? And everyone's like, well, no, you can't do oil sanctions on Iran because the world needs oil. You just drive up the price of oil if you did sanctions. Well, eventually things are so bad that we're doing oil sanctions with the European Union and other places. Now, here's where the European Union has their ass in a sling, because the states that buy the most amount of oil from Iran, guess what, are Greece, Italy, and Spain.
Yes.
By the way,
the most
freaking broke
ones.
Yeah. So hey, Greece, you know how you're like totally, your economy's totally shit canned, like three ways to Sunday, and, you know, like your standard of livings are completely over? Yeah, here's the other thing. Stop buying oil. This is going to be good for you.
It's almost like somebody has an agenda to screw up the entire planet, and they're just playing one against the other and just causing devastation and havoc everywhere. It's crazy. I mean, it can't be happening, right? I mean, there's no way that anybody could have that level of knowledge of all the financial intricacies of every nation. Could it be possible?
Yeah.
Could the central banks be colluding? I don't know.
Who
I'm just throwing it out there.
So they got to find some other places for these guys to get their oil from. But at first they're like, hey, wait a minute. There's a fucking problem here for us, you know. So then Ryan says, you know, and not to pick on Ryan, but, you know, he is the challenger, the guy coming up. But the thing is, he's challenging with the same policy. And that's what I'm trying to point out to you, you know. Paul Ryan may be a good guy. I don't know, the vice president, probable douchebag. He's been there forever. But, you know, how can you fight the policy with the same policy? That's what I'm interested in finding out, right?
Well, it's because he wears a different colored tie and he works out.
Yes. Yes, I saw him pumping iron, which actually made me want to barf. Anyway, so he says Iran, they're racing towards a nuclear weapon. They're 4 years closer towards a nuclear weapons capability. It's been 4 years since Obama came in, so ergo, they must be 4 years closer. Whether it's four productive years, yes or no, I do remember the Stuxnet virus and other things, and various nuclear scientists having bombs taped to their cars and blowing up and dying, but technically 4 years has passed. We've had four different sanctions at the UN on Iran, three from the Bush administration, one here. And the only reason we got it is because Russia watered it down and prevented the sanctions from hitting the central bank. Mitt Romney proposed these sanctions in 2007. Let me tell you guys something. Mitt Romney did not think of these sanctions on his own. It's spoiler alert. Mitt Romney, it's not like he was, you know, having a tete-a-tete with the burning bush. He's like, hey, oil sanctions. I just thought of this. Yeah,
crippling oil sanctions.
They thought of this back in the 80s. Anyway.
Yeah.
In Congress, I've been fighting for these sanctions in 2009, you know, good for you. The administration was blocking us every step of the way only because we had strong bipartisan support. Were we able to overrule their objections and put them in the administration? Okay, so he says, but we only got it because Russia watered it down. Yeah, well, doofus, how are you going to get global sanctions, right? You got to go to the UN because that's kind of the global community, right? So you're sort of, unless you come up with another body, you're kind of stuck dealing with this pile of shit organization, right? And so, yeah, Russia can water it down. You know why? They sit on the Security Council. So they watered it down. They said, don't put it on the central bank. You know why? Because Russia's fucking doing business with the central bank, right?
Exactly.
You know,
follow the money.
Do you know how the fucking world works? I mean, what are we dealing with here, you know? You just getting started here? Anyway, so then Biden says, and this is kind of BS, but look, imagine we had let the Republican Congress work out the sanctions. You'd think there's any possibility the entire world would have joined us. The entire world joined us on this. Russia, China, all of our allies, these are the most crippling sanctions in the history of sanctions, period, period. Okay, I will agree with him. These are definitely the most crippling sanctions that the United States has enacted on Iran, okay, not necessarily in the history of sanctions, because they used to besiege cities and nothing got in or out, you know, and they would throw dead material into it, like rotting corpses, in order to spread disease. So I would say that is a very crippling sanction on a city. But in Iran, we've never done oil sanctions before. It's always been talked about. So I would say that, you know, this is pretty crippling. But would the entire world have joined us, Russia and China? Okay, let me tell you something. China's not joining us in these sanctions. India is not joining us in these sanctions. South Korea is not joining us in these sanctions, nor is Japan, because they get a large portion of their oil from Iran, right?
Yeah.
So basically China gets about 550,000 barrels a day from Iran, right? So China uses, 5.5-ish, you know, it changes each month, but a million barrels a day of oil. And so they're importing basically, 10% or so from Iran. Hold on. I've got a noise problem. Okay. So what we told China was that if they cut their oil imports down to anywhere from 10 to 20%, that they would be considered to be in line with the sanctions. Okay. We told that to Japan. Japan applied for a waiver, like, come on, man, where do you think we've been getting our oil from, right? Like, we're over here in Japan, It's not like the United States is exporting oil to Japan, because we use all the oil that we make and we have to import. So we're not sending any oil over to Japan. You know, and they're like, well, where are we getting it from? I mean, what is, you know, okay, yeah, so they make some down in Indonesia. Well, we're buying that stuff, right? Where else are we getting it from? It's not like India is an oil importer too. You know, so where are we going to go? We keep going along Asia, and you get to Iran, the closest place that's actually exporting oil, so we're buying from Iran. And one of the reasons is that Saudi Arabia sells to you guys, right, the United States. So, I don't know, we just, that's the guy we found. They're like, hey, we got oil, you want some? We're like, yeah. So we told everyone that as long as you cut your oil imports by 10 to 20%, we'd say it was okay. South Korea, same thing, right? So it's not like China's going along with this thing. If anything, China, actually pretty merciless, and sort of have to have some respect for this, they told the Iranians, they're like, hey, yeah, with these sanctions, nobody wants your oil, so you know what?
We'll buy it for a price.
We want a bigger, yeah, we want a bigger price discount on that. We want to pay a lot less for your crappy
Great.
Oil.
So our policy just basically emboldened our number one competitor.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so now they're getting a super good deal on Iranian oil. And, of course, that hurts Iran, which, you know, is in our interest. But also China's just sitting there. They're the chief beneficiaries of the sanctions regime.
Mm-hmm.
So to say, for Biden to say that, you know, we got the whole world to go along, not entirely
it's almost
accurate.
Like, it's almost like everybody's screwing everybody. And China's the beneficiary. Fantastic plan. That's great, especially since they're our number one economic competitor. It's sheer genius. Well, Tex, we're in the last hour, and a couple of things I noticed. One is a lot of these countries are, of course, now trading in making deals that do not use the dollar, which is frightening for us because as soon as that happens, we're on a large scale, we're screwed. Two, you did say something about, you know, everybody goes to the UN. Well, as long as we're in the United Nations, I think that it is important for us to honor the agreement to go and let them know what's going on internationally. But the question I have is, why the hell are we in the United Nations? Screw the United Nations. It's nothing more than a bunch of third world countries that just piss on us. And we've got a lot of people on the line who probably share some of these views and all want to chime in. Now, I could do the order thing and bring them in one at a time and have a nice conversation with them. But it's Sunday night and I'm kind of tired, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to just turn it into a Spartan sandpit and see who will talk over who and whoever has the dominant voice. Of course, anytime you want to chime in, text, we'll just silence everybody. But live with us right now, we got Trog, Sammy, and Randy. Guys, welcome. Yeah. Have at it.
You want me to read this list?
I am going to interject here. Hold on
Gunny
a second.
Gunny in the house.
Hold on a second. U.S. oil is heavy crude, which is a premium. And the oil that we are getting from Saudi Arabia is a different quality of oil. Wake up, people.
Well, I would say, I mean, within the United States, there are all sorts of grades of crude. Basically, what you want is there actually is, you know, naturally occurring gasoline in the ground. You can actually extract this stuff. It's called natural gasoline. But what we're mainly going after in the United States right now is shale gas, right? Yeah. Well, we're going after shale gas, right? Okay. So gas is the deepest part of an oil formation, which forms closest to the earth because of the hottest, which means the molecules have to be very small, and therefore, since the molecules are small, they're gaseous, right? Then, as you come up from the crust of the earth, you start getting into what are called natural gas liquids, so you got ethane and propane, right? So the thing is, natural gas, we have so much of it in the United States now, over the past several years, the natural gas price is not linked to the oil price anymore. And
you have enough natural gas coming from the White House.
Yeah, exactly. So people are drilling for the liquids, which is the ethane and propane. Now, ethane is very volatile. You can't really move it by pipeline. There's a lot of limitations on what you can do with it, but that's not to say it's not valuable. It's actually very valuable. So the actual barrel of oil in the United States is getting sweeter. Now, where we're getting sour crude from is, if you look at Canadian oil sands, that, of course, is a very thick, viscous, you know, asphalty type, super heavy crude. But, of course, you know, they treat it and pump a bunch of hydrogen into it and everything, and they can sweeten it up before they start sending it down here. Saudi Arabia itself, though, produces both sweet and heavy crudes. So the thing is, we're better off if we produce all of our own crude, because the U.S. oil industry has, you know, all the other – people don't understand this. Okay, so if you own a piece of land in the United States, let's say you own 10 acres, who cares, right? And that 10 acres happens to be over a patch of oil, right? Well, you own that patch of oil. Okay, so an oil company will come to you, and I know lots of people down here in Texas where oil companies came to them with checks for whatever, $100,000, and said, you know, we'll buy your mineral rights from you. And people either agree or they don't agree, right? But they pre-print the check, right? Like, right now you can have $100,000 if you turn this over to us, right? So in the United States, if you have a piece of land and it turns out you have oil under it, hot damn, you're rich. You know, and people will become millionaires overnight. And the shale oil and shale gas stuff, people sat on it forever, and they're like, we could never do anything with it. You'll never make any money. Overnight millionaires now, right, with the shale oil and gas stuff. Yeah, exactly, right? But if you live in France and Total discovers oil on your land, you're not going to make a fucking nickel. They're just going to come. The government's going to take that spot of your land, and they're going to drill a pad on it, and they're going to extract the oil, because in the rest of the world, apart from the United States and Canada, they don't have private ownership of mineral rights. All the resources of the country are owned by the government. This is what our ancestors were trying to get the hell away from. They basically are just stealing from everyone. So if you live in Iraq, right, and you're herding a bunch of goats, and you live near Kirkuk, and say you have 100 acres, and under that 100 acres is one of the world's most fertile oil fields, well, it doesn't matter to you, because that goes to the Iraqi oil company, not to you. And all they do is take up some of your herding ground and bring a bunch of trucks in to make a bunch of noise.
And my question to you, Rex and Tex, we went to Iraq and we expended over 2,000 people's lives, and how many thousands of lives that have been decimated, and what we have done, we did it in Libya. How come we are not getting paid back in oil? Plain and simple. That is bullshit.
Because our political elites are idiots? I mean, look, the thing is, there's two models here. There's only two models that work, right? So the Founding Fathers was, let's not go get involved in a bunch of foreign wars because that's a bad idea. It's going to create all these foreign entanglements. And they remembered how their own peace with Great Britain, when they won, was chained to the fetters of Gibraltar, right? There's this big freaking battle over Gibraltar, and we couldn't get a peace because we told Paris that we weren't going to have a separate peace with them. Eventually we did. We're just like, screw this. We don't give a shit about Gibraltar. We're just free, okay? So piss off. But they were like, we can't be getting involved in all this crap going on overseas, partly because they were small, but partly because, you know, we didn't understand it or care about it. I mean, literally, we were on the other side of the planet. We might as well have been on the dark side of the moon, right?
But my question to you, Tex, is we've lost over 2,000 patriots that have given their life in Iraq. Why are we not being paid back in oil?
Gets to the other model. So this is there's the non-intervention, nothing involved, let's just live on the dark side of the moon and no one will bother us model, right? Which that's kind of new because only America really was able to do that in a few other countries in recent history. But the older model is don't get involved unless you have a national interest at stake. Go defend that national interest and then extract some form of payment for it, right? Because why am I helping you? I don't know you. Who the hell are you? Why do you need my help? How much are you willing to pay for this help?
Where's our tribute?
Yeah, give me some tribute, right? And you know, the way the Romans did this, they didn't even, it's not like they negotiated an agreement ahead of time. They just brought the army in, and the army just took whatever wasn't nailed down. If it was nailed down, they beat it down with a baseball bat, you know, or the equivalent thereof, and they took it. And that was how the soldiers got paid. They got paid in loot. So, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you necessarily want to go back to that system, but I'm saying that if you are going to have a global empire, you can't let it be one that drains you of blood and treasure, because eventually it's unsustainable. So if you're going to have one, at least do it if there's a national interest at stake. Now, this goes back to what Newt Gingrich was saying about being a Wilsonian realist. A realist is someone who only gets involved in foreign conflicts if we have a national interest at stake and we go uphold that national interest, right? So, you know, if there is a reason we need to be there. Being in a conflict over oil is a perfectly legitimate reason to be in a conflict, okay? You know, if you're going to be there, we do import a lot of oil, and the price of oil actually is a stranglehold on our economy, okay? So a lot of people get upset about that, but oil is like the spice in Dune, okay? It's everything around you, you may or may not know this, but pretty much is made out of oil. If it's plastic, it's freaking oil. Your tires are oil. The roads you roll on are made out of oil. Those are asphalts, right, which come out of refineries. So oil's kind of everywhere. But if you go do that, what he's saying about the Wilsonian part is, if you go get involved out of a national interest, I'm not saying oil is the only national interest. There's a lot of national interests. I'm just giving an example, and we happen to be talking about oil. We as Americans uniquely want to instill our value system on that country, and we should, which is a democratic, form of governance and implant our, you know, ideas there. And so he's pointing to what we did in Germany, right, and what we did in Japan and what we've done in South Korea, right? So those countries are all very successful. So if you're going to do something like that, and people can decide whether they want to or not, but A, make sure there's a national interest, meaning that you have not necessarily got paid in cash, but you upheld your interest, and that should be payment enough, because if you didn't have a significant American national interest, it never would have been worth your while to get involved in the first place, or should not have been. So you upheld that interest. That was what you got out of it. And Americans fight wars of unconditional surrender. Americans don't often compromise with our opponents. If you look at our history of warfare, you know, even, you know, the American Civil War. That's why, you know, Ulysses S. Grant, U.S. Grant, unconditional surrender Grant. You fight until the other guy is completely devastated. We do not fight limited wars in the United States. We just, historically, we don't.
And
yeah,
as
the interesting thing, Sammy and Tex, is that the issue really is who decides the national interest. And the Founding Fathers put a very powerful check against the situation we find ourselves in now, which is that the corporations basically decide what the national interest is, and the bankers unleash our troops for their benefit. Well, the Founding Fathers specifically put the war power. The Founding Fathers specifically put the war power in the Congress, which is made up of the House, which represents the people, and the Senate, which represents the states. Thereby, if it is a national interest, it would have to be something that a majority of Congress found to be a national interest. But since we haven't declared war
since
1942, our national interest is decided by a few elite bankers, and hence the problem. And that's why we can – go ahead, Randy.
Well, I was just going to say the only input here is the fact that we don't have state representation. Our senators do not represent the states. They represent the same constituency that the Congress represents, only in a larger scale. So thus, there is no check and balance for the state. And if we did, it's my contention that we would not have these kind of situations because, quite frankly, the standing armies that we have distributed around the globe would be more under the control of the states like it was originally intended. and we wouldn't have this problem.
And well, how many of the states would vote for us to still be in Afghanistan? You know, how many of the states are like, oh, I got to get all those benefits? You know, as Paul Ryan said, everything we've gained. Which one of the states is like, hey, I want all that stuff we've gained in Afghanistan? I don't know what we've gained. What have we gained?
Exactly.
Hey, Randy, why would I need my 9mm Luger here at my house to protect my family if we did not have Brock? The only reason I have the gun is because of Barack Hussein Obama and Mitt Romney.
Well, I would suggest, Jamie, that the only reason you have your 9mm Luger is because the Founding Fathers gave you a Second Amendment, which guarantees your right to have that weapon. And that weapon isn't really designed to be had for foreign intervention, because that's what the state armies are supposed to help prevent. That 9mm is there designed to protect you from your own government.
Exactly. And that's my point. I mean, mm-hmm. we got as you have said, Rex, and as Dan has said, and as Randy has said, we have a duopoly. And when this country is going to wake up and get their fucking heads, I'm sorry for using that word,
out of
their asses.
We only have adults on this show, so, you know, the weak, we weed out the weak, right? So that's all right.
But get your heads out of your asses and wake up. But I'm getting ready to say good night to y'all. God bless you all. And we will be back here tomorrow night. And
what time are you on tomorrow night, Jamie?
No, Lord. It will probably be 10 o'clock because we're going to promote. I'm going to be doing a money bomb for, I forgot his name right now.
De Castro,
and we'll be doing a money bomb for him because we got to get him elected here in Florida. He was awesome on the show tonight. I don't know how many of y'all heard that. Mary came on the show, and you were on the show, Rex, with Mark. Mark is a one awesome patriot. Randy was there. And what did you think about Mark, Randy?
Oh, he's a brother at arms, man. You know, he's one of my band of brothers. So absolutely, I had not heard him speak before, and you know, while I'm not surprised, I am very happy to hear, you know, the very things that he's talking, because we're basically, and as Rex and Chris and all of you all know, that basically, we're singing from the same sheet of music. We're studying it, especially those who've been around for a little bit longer than, a year or two. So, you know, it like I said, it wasn't surprising, but I was certainly glad to hear, you know, the points that he was making.
Oh, he was awesome. And the good thing about it, though, Robert Blard Talk Radio and the Tex and Rex Show, we are all in sync. And without people being in sync in what we're trying to do for our country, we would be screwed. Would you agree, Rex?
Yes, Sammy. I mean, I think that the idea of being in sync is that we're all, and as Randy said, reading from the same sheet of music, and that sheet of music is the U.S. Constitution. And when you look at your candidates and you see what they're up to, you know, are they adhering to the Constitution or are they not? Are they supporting the Constitution or are they standing against it? And that's that. If you use that as the measuring rod, then you will always make the right decision. And then we can have our disagreements within that framework about particular policies, but that's why we have a Congress.
The problem is that right now the Congress is not adhering to the Constitution, nor is it representing the American people.
I looked out somebody very big. His name is Chris.
Chris is here, Sammy.
I deeply apologize for not bringing out Chris. Chris has been a fighter out here. And that's a deep apology. But, gentlemen, y'all rock on tonight. And we'll be back here tomorrow night. And love you all, brothers.
Well, sounds good. Thank you for calling in, Sammy.
Thanks, Sammy.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, everybody, that is Sammy Samford, Constitutional Conservatives Unite. Please tune in tomorrow, which is Monday at 10 p.m. You can find him on Blog Talk Radio. And he also referenced Robert Jetter's show, Bard's Talk, Political Logic, which is also on Blog Talk Radio. And you can always follow the shows by clicking the follow button above the icon, and you will get notifications when we are broadcasting. And we appreciate you sharing with other people who are looking for a message about the Constitution and about liberty. Chris, you haven't had much input, and we're in the last half hour, so what's on your mind, and what would you like to chat about?
Well, I was interested in what you thought if you had actually read off the list of countries that China is doing trade deals with that are no longer using the U.S. dollar.
Yeah. It's a long list. If you have it handy, please do. But I know it includes India, and I think Chile and I mean several other countries.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bode well for the dollar.
No, China and Japan, that's the largest trade agreement in the history of the world, no longer using the U.S. dollar. China and Russia, same thing. China and Brazil, China and Australia, Japan and India, India and China, Iran and Russia. On oil deals because of the sanctions, China and Chile, China and the United
China,
Arab Emirates.
China, by the way, being the largest source of incremental petroleum demands for the foreseeable future, accounting for half of the growth of global crude demand, and therefore, I would say, you know, people who could say, hey, I want this priced in yuan.
Well, and also Russia has signed an agreement with China saying we will supply you unlimited, no questions asked. You call the number and we'll pipe the oil to you. So it goes on and on and on. And then China just set up a new system and announced it. And that system, any oil-producing country that wants to trade oil in their currency system, it's all in place. So there you have it. I don't know how many trillions of dollars that means it will no longer be used of American money overseas, but, you know, the gentleman on the video was talking about all that money is going to come home unused, and when that hits our market, who knows what the hell is going to happen. He had his opinions. I'm not that smart, but it didn't look good.
Well,
yeah,
I mean,
you don't have to
be too smart. Go ahead, Tex.
Well, I was going to say one thing that, you know, sort of prevents that from happening. Now, this doesn't prevent it forever, but it does prevent it from happening, is that, you know, people don't necessarily like China, okay? So Japan, the Chinese hate Japan, okay? That's just, they don't like them because, you know, they kind of came in and they have this thing called World War II. So China is like the Poland of Asia, and Japan is sort of like the Germany from World War II, so the Chinese don't really like Japan, and Japan is not anxious to turn its fate over to China, mostly because, you know, they don't like the thought of that sort of day of reckoning coming. And Russia, you have to remember, Russia really is, it exists somewhere in between. It's a Eurasian power, but it's always wanted to be a European power, and its population certainly is largely European and concentrated in Europe, but it does extend all the way out to the Far East and has borders with China. And one of the things they're very concerned about is Lake Baikal, which is the largest freshwater lake in the world, source of freshwater. And it's right next to China, and China has 1 billion people, and Russia is sparsely populated over there. And what happens when China starts outstripping its resources and starts looking for Lebensraum, right, as Hitler called it, right? So the Russians are leery of China, and also the Russians, they sort of look down on China to the extent that the Russians had their Russian Revolution first, the communist revolution in 1917, and then it spread to China. So they always looked at China as like their little brothers, if you will. And they've never kind of gotten over this we're better than China thing. But now China is doing demonstrably better than them, and the Russians don't necessarily like it. So China has enough, well, I wouldn't say enough. China, they can bluster and they can throw their weight around and say these types of things about we're going to do oil deals in yuan. It's not clear everyone's going to go along with it because China has a history that people don't necessarily like. So it's dangerous. I'm not saying it's going to happen overnight, but these are the types of things you got to be worried about. And this is one of the reasons it wouldn't even be a question if we had sound money here, but we don't. And that's really the problem.
Yeah, well, that's always the problem. And the fact is that we've kind of, through the global bankers, have basically forced the petrodollar on the world, which in some ways has benefited us compared to the other nations. However, it's never truly been a benefit for the American people because what's happening here is that our dollars are constantly devalued by the bankers, which is basically taking wealth out of your pocket and transferring it in a redistributive system to a few elite bankers. And it's working out well for them, and they're going to continue to make trillions of dollars in profits off your backs. And that's precisely why, unless we return a sound monetary system to our country, the current Federal Reserve note is going to collapse. And if you don't replace it with a sound gold-backed U.S. Treasury currency, you are going to end up subsumed into some kind of global SDR currency, which is basically going to eliminate the last vestige of sovereignty that we have. And that's what this election is really about. So as they quibble in the little shows they put on once a week about who said this and who knows that and how his tie was and Biden was smirking and Romney couldn't turn his head and blah, 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 the real issue is this is just a show. It's just a game to make you think that you have a choice between the R and the D or the blue and the red. And the fact is that they're going to continue the same agenda that the bankers have put in place, which is to eliminate the United States as the block in their global hegemonic system of monetary control. So when it comes down to it, if you don't start now, immediately, right now, with this election, voting for the Constitution, voting for liberty, and voting for candidates who are going to restore power to where it belongs, which is properly in your hands, in your state, then we're well down the road to serfdom, and you can kiss your ass goodbye. So voting for Barack Obama is going to be absolutely terrible, and if you made that mistake in 2008, fix it this time. Don't vote for him. If you're thinking about voting for Mitt Romney, you're making as much of a mistake. Yes, sir.
Do you want to get to what I think is the most bizarre moment of the vice presidential debate?
Please.
I find this one truly puzzling. Now, you know, I can sort of piece together how I think this happened, but, you know, who knows what happened. So the questioner, which is Raddatz, wants to bring things back to the economy, okay? So what's going on with the economy? Okay, so Biden gets this tee up this first, and so there's a paragraph that we'll skip, and then he says, "We knew we had to act for the middle class," Joe Biden says this. "We immediately went out and rescued General Motors." I guess that'll save the middle class, I don't know. But we had to act for the middle class, and we immediately went out and rescued General Motors. We went ahead and made sure that we cut taxes for the middle class, and in addition to that, when that occurred, what did Romney do? Romney said, no, let Detroit go bankrupt. We moved in and helped people refinance their homes. Governor Romney said, no, let the foreclosures hit the bottom, and, you know, ellipsis. I've had it up to here with this notion that 47% need to take responsibility. Okay, right. So here we have that they went and they rescued General Motors, and Romney said, let Detroit go bankrupt. Well, you know, if a company goes bankrupt, let me just say, it doesn't go away. It goes through a bankruptcy process. It restructures. This allows it to renegotiate its shitty union contracts from the late 50s and early 60s that are literally killing the company like parasites on the host. So, you know, I kind of agree with Romney, which is let General Motors go into a bankruptcy process and renegotiate their contracts. But what, you know, the Obama administration wanted to do is, oh, well, these are our voters, so we won't let, you know, General Motors restructure and renegotiate their union contracts so these guys will vote for us and continue to have a shitty auto company named General Motors that has to come back begging Congress for bailouts. What is the periodicity on this now? Every 20 years they need more money for whatever shit that they got into? Okay, anyway. But Paul Ryan says, and so we got a little back and forth, and he says, but he talks about Detroit. Okay, Mitt Romney's a car guy. All right, so let's get down into, and let's just say what I just told you, which is, you know, hey, you go into a restructuring process, you can fix that company, and then it doesn't need more bailouts, like, you know, all these other people coming and asking for bailouts and all this kind of stuff, you know, you could fix it. But he says, he talks about Detroit. Mitt Romney's a car guy, all right? So, bam, I'm in the driver's seat. I'm with you, Paul. We're going to go somewhere with this one. He says, they keep misquoting him, but let me tell you about Mitt Romney, the Mitt Romney I know. This is a guy who, I was talking to a family in Northborough, Massachusetts the other day. Oh, God, not this, okay? And I'm not going to get this family thing because, you know, whatever. Their kids were hit in a car crash, four of them. Two of them, Rob and Reed, were paralyzed. The Romneys didn't know them. They went to the same church. They'd never met before. Notice how this doesn't have to do with, you know, just General Motors going into bankruptcy or not. But, you know, okay, it's human interest. Let's humor the guy, okay? And Mitt asked if he could come over on Christmas. He brought his boys, his wife, and gifts. Later on, he said, you know, you're struggling, so-and-so. Don't worry about their college. I'll pay for it. When they told me that story, because you know what? Mitt Romney doesn't tell these stories. And then he ends up, this is where he gave his zinger. And with respect to that quote, I think the vice president knows very well that sometimes the words don't come out of his mouth the right way. Now, what in the hell was that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you had teed up an intellectual battle between whether or not bailing out a failing auto industry is a good idea or allowing it to go through bankruptcy and a restructuring process is a good idea. And we got some kind of bullshit human interest story about Mitt Romney's a car guy. And he talked to a family, and their kids were hit in a car crash. So was Mitt driving? I mean, what? How is the one? I don't get it.
Wouldn't be the first time.
I don't fucking get it. Okay, and then they come back to Biden, and then Biden says, so this is where, you know, I've got cognitive dissonance. I think maybe Ryan wanted to talk about what I was thinking, you know, and saying that, you know, a structured bankruptcy, but the Romney team told him not to, and so to tell him some human interest story, and say, you know, I don't know, right? And so then Biden says, well, when I was a little younger than the congressman, my wife was in an accident, killed my daughter, my wife, and my two sons survived. I have sat in the homes of many people who've gone through what I've gone through because of the one thing. Okay, so he goes into his story, and everybody, we all know that Joe Biden was a horrible tragedy in his family, and you know, my heart goes out to him and everything.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, doesn't it seem to you that structurally the Republican debate team would have said, look, Biden is going to go to this and talk about his family, and that's going to get sympathy. And so what you respond with is Mitt Romney did this thing about this other family that had been in a car crash, and this shows Romney's empathy. But you see what I'm saying? Like, Ryan didn't know what to say about the bankruptcy, and so he preemptively launched into the story of the car crash. You know, I mean, I don't know. The whole thing is bizarre. So, I don't know, what
well,
do you guys think about that?
Well, it's a simple fact of he missed his cue, you know, because remember, all these debates are pre-scripted. There's no spontaneity. There's no real issues discussed. They got these contracts that stipulate what does and doesn't happen and who's included and who's excluded. And he probably tripped his cue. But why are they giving us this stuff anyway? Here's the reason why.
Who? I mean,
They've
look.
Done their... And,
Well, I'm just saying, they've done their analysis. We're emotive voters. We vote based on emotion. You vote because you like the guy. You vote because he's on your team. You vote because he said something really cool and funny. He laid out a nice zinger. He told a nice human interest story. And as long as we keep voting that way, they're going to keep feeding us this crap. What we should be voting on is, does this man believe in the Constitution? Is he going to adhere to the Constitution? Does he think that America is an exceptional nation? And does he plan on putting forward policies within the limits and the framework of the Constitution that will help all of us live our individual lives
Where's
better?
The Constitution, does it say the government has the power to bail out any industry with our tax
nowhere.
Dollars? Where is that? I don't know.
Yeah, I haven't found it. Four-page document, and I haven't found it in any of those four pages text. It's a very good question, and I would like to see you moderate the next so-called debate and ask that question. That would be a question worth answering.
Well, the other thing is, you know, where they're saying they told the banks, to like, and the auto industry, they told Ford, like, you're taking this bailout money. Ford's like, we don't want it. We don't need it. They said, no, you're taking it. Because if you don't take it, then it makes General Motors look bad. Well, yeah, they fucking suck. That's why they look bad. Look bad because they're shit, not because we're not taking a loan. And they're like, take the freaking loan, or we'll screw you. And know what you say when the world's most powerful government says we're going to screw you over if you don't take our money? You take the freaking money. I mean, what are you going to do? It's an offer you can't refuse. Is this really what the United States government has come down to? This is the government of the people, for the people, and by the people? Take the money. Yeah. I say you take that money. Either your signature or your brains are going to be on that page. I mean, that's where we are.
Now, there is one thing interesting about it. You know, when the whole TARP thing was going out and, you know, they were forcing, you know, money down banks' throats. You will take this money. And there would be penalties if they didn't. And so I actually know a couple of bankers, you know, private owned bankers, not the private cartel banking of the Federal Reserve thing.
Oh, your friends never get bailed out.
Well, yeah.
They're
well,
too small
no,
to
no,
succeed.
No. Well, yeah, exactly. But no, what happened is they were forced to take this money, and they said, okay, fine. And they just took the money, set it in the account, and just sat on it until, what was it, a year or 12 months, 24 months, whatever the criteria was, and they just simply gave it back. They said, we don't want that money because it comes with strings. And so there, you know, there's a few people that were standing on principle and not taking it because, you know, we saw, you know, some of those that took the money and still, you know, the banks were ousted.
Absolutely. And where is the government getting this authority? It's getting this authority because it does these things. Nobody says a word. No one says a word. You just watch the news like, oh, okay, well, I hope they bail out the banks because then the economy will be good. Congress is not bailing out the banks. Congress does not have any money. John Boehner is not putting his own money up for this. You know, Barney Frank is not on the hook for, you know, bailing out of shit, okay? You're on the hook. It's your money. They get their money from you. So they're not actually doing anything. You're doing all of this shit, okay? It's your money. So quit
well, it's
this
your bill.
Sense that Congress has this huge, you know, magic pile of gold that they can do all this crap with. They only have your money, okay? They're blowing it.
Let me make this point, because I make this when I talk to Tea Parties, especially when I start talking about the 16th Amendment. Consider this. Our founding fathers weren't even a quarter, not even 25% taxed the way we are right now. In fact, I don't think they were taxed 10% of what we are being taxed right now, and they went to war. They killed people over the issue of taxation without representation. And that's exactly what we got here is taxation without representation, and they went to war with hardly even a fraction of the taxing issues that we have today. Now, what's that say about us?
We're weenies. We're conditioned into accepting the fact that we're willing to part ways with 50% of our income, which is basically your time working, which essentially means that half the year you're a friggin' slave. And we're also willing to part ways with massive amounts of our wealth through an invisible tax called inflation, which, much to most people's surprise, does not mean prices rising. That's price inflation, which is actually the result. The cause is monetary inflation, which is when they print money, or as the cool word they use these days, quantitative easing. So you're being ripped off, and what you're doing is voting for it. Because when you vote for Mitt Romney, Goldman Sachs wins. When you vote for Barack Obama, Goldman Sachs wins. You need to vote for somebody who does not have their allegiance to the bankers first, but to the Constitution, and they intend to defend it from enemies foreign and domestic, whether those be the bankers or foreign terrorists or foreign countries, or whether it be morons in their own party like Rince-Pubic and John Sununu and John, what's his name, Boehner, whatever the hell his name is. Anyway, we're in the last Bonehead. We're in the last 10 minutes, so Randy, if you will give us your closing thoughts, and then we'll go to Chris, and then Tex is going to wrap up the vice presidential show analysis.
Just one thing, real quick, is just I'm excited about seeing people wake up. It's a matter of not only waking up, and you guys are doing a good job of waking people up, but we got to get them up out of the bed. We got to get them into the fight, and this fight continues beyond November the 6th. On November the 7th, we start cracking and start making a viable option, a viable force to take down this duopoly, and that's what I'm dedicated for, and I am excited about joining all you all as a band of brothers, and we just are asking everyone to join in with the fight, and we can take this back, because this is a government of we the people. It's just been the fact that we the people have been apathetic and allowed this to happen, and it's time to put the brakes on it, folks. So join us, and let's take the fight to the enemy.
This can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Instead of whining about it, do something about it, like Randy said.
I totally agree. Everything that I'm doing now, I mean, besides November 6th, that's even what we were talking about on Robert's show. I don't know if we ever got there, with the way the conversation went, but that was the title, 24 days to the election and beyond. And I was watching a little debate war, everybody getting all hot and bothered over their candidate on my group just a minute ago, and I'm thinking, whatever happens on November 6th. I mean, they control the machine, so what are you getting all worried about? Bottom line is, we do everything we can, and we look to those down ballot candidates, because the top of the ticket's only one portion of this. If we want our country back, we've got to look at the House, the Senate, governors, state houses, state senates, sheriffs. We need to get constitutional people across the board. That young gentleman that called into Robert, had that kind of defeatist mindset. And I'm thinking, no, you need to look. There's a lot of great people across this country who are fighting hard for this, to win this battle. And they need our help. They need our support. We need to educate people on these people. We need to educate people on the Constitution. We need to do more and more constitutional discussions, because it's a fascinating subject, and it's amazing how few people understand it or have ever picked it up or read it or even know how to find it on Google. And that's exciting to me, because, I see options. That's why I'm doing this. I see a pathway to success for the only damn country I have left. Where else are we going to go? Hello. I'm done.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks,
yeah,
Randy.
Robert Gibbons said that was the problem with the Roman Empire under the emperors, is that once the Roman Empire ceased to be a republic, right, and became an empire, and they did that by a series of foreign wars after foreign wars after foreign wars, and inflation after inflation after inflation by devaluing the currency over and over again to make sure they had enough money. As Cicero said, the sinews of war are infinite money, and the way you can get that is to inflate. Eventually, once the republic became the empire, and the empire became corrupt because the republic was corrupt, once the emperor was dissatisfied with you and you were summoned to Rome, he said the problem was, at that point, there was no place else to go. they had conquered the known world. There was no place to escape to. And so if you were summoned to Rome, usually you stabbed yourself in the heart with your own sword because you were going to die at the hands of the emperor anyway. So suicide was preferable. That's the problem. There is no other place to go. This is it. This is America. So liberty, you know, lives or dies here. And it's up to us to ensure that we honor our forefathers and that we make sure that our government adheres to the constitutional principles that we all agreed on. We have a social contract with the government. And if you have other people, neighbors who are cynical, okay, be cynical with them. I'm not beholden to any party anymore. I'm beholden to certain principles. Get them participating again. A lot of people have dropped out because they become so cynical. Well, if all the people who have dropped out start voting their conscience, we can actually start having an effect and we can get rid of the two-party duopoly. Because it's easy to run a duopoly. They have control of the media and all these other resources, and they can tell everyone what to think. But the, quote, facts on the ground dictate reality. And if no one's voting for those parties, they got a real problem.
Yep, that's absolutely true, Tex. And I think that what you pointed out is pretty amazing, because there are millions of eligible voters who have just given up on voting because it doesn't make a difference. Well, that's true. If you vote for Democrat Barack Obama or Republican Mitt Romney, there won't be a difference. You will get the same crap that you've been getting and that you've been accepting. But there are votes that do count. Now, one will tell you, well, yeah, but voting for a third party is merely taking votes away from my guy or and helping the other guy win. Well, no, that's not true, because if you really want Mitt Romney to win, then you should vote for Mitt Romney. And if you really want Barack Obama to win, then you should really vote for Barack Obama. You're not voting against the other guy. You're voting for your guy. And if you want neither one of them to win because you know that they are the same insipid, worthless continuation of the same crappy policies that nobody likes, then vote your conscience. There are plenty of candidates to choose from. And in some states, I think there's 10 of them, you can write in anybody you want. And in those states, I would strongly implore you to write in Congressman Ronald B. Paul, because he will probably be able to take away a significant amount of votes from both of those morons. In the states where he is not eligible for write-in, and you better be checking all the way through the next 24 days, because more and more states are coming on board and saying, yes, it is very valid for Americans to write in anybody they choose for the office. So therefore, voting early, which is really absentee voting, is reserved for those who cannot be at the polling place on November 6th. If you can be there, then you should not vote early as a matter of convenience. You should wait to see what develops and make your decision based on the situation on the ground at the time. If, you, of course, you're serving overseas in the foreign office or in the military, then clearly you can't be here on November 6th, in which case, please, by all means, vote early. You have to, because you won't be here. And the other candidates, well, if you're libertarian inclined, vote for Gary Johnson. If you're a constitutionalist, you've got Virgil Goode. If you're a socialist, vote for Jill Stein. In fact, I encourage everybody who has an inclination to vote for Barack Obama. Barack Obama is the same as Mitt Romney, who you don't like. So don't vote for Barack Obama. Vote for Jill Stein. That'll be fantastic. I doubt you'll win, but at least you'll make your voice heard and you let your party know that you want more socialism. Now, I will fight you tooth and nail on that, because I don't want it. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, let me say, this is someone else. This is Camille Paglia, who is voting for the Green Party, and she is a hard to pin down, both sort of, she's a feminist, but a feminist contrarian, and someone who's voting for the Green Party. She also has a lot of right-wing views. So she says, the first reason I'm voting for the Green Party is the state of endless war. Second is the appalling rise in military and domestic use of drones. My third reason for going green is the creeping totalitarianism of Obamacare, which Jill Stein, who's the nominee for the Green Party, as a physician, is rightly skeptical about. I began denouncing the Obamacare bill in my Salon column within 2 months. So a lot of people, even on the left, are abandoning the two-party system because it has clearly failed the American people. And wherever you are on the spectrum, left, right, or you don't even know, the thing is, we got to get away from statism, okay? And we got to start going for liberty. and find candidates who are going to deliver liberty to you, okay? So quit voting for the two parties. They apparently are doing just fine. They own major networks, and the major networks kiss their ass all the time, okay? So why don't you find the third parties that need help, that actually are saying the things that you want to hear? Go there. Yeah. Start heading towards the light and quit living in the darkness.
Exactly. And don't think so much that, well, but they have no chance of winning. It's not about winning. Let's be clear about something. Odds are that George Soros has already decided whether Mitt Romney or Barack Obama is going to be the next president. Either way, nothing changes. It doesn't matter. But what does matter is by voting for those third parties, you let them know that you're awake and you're no longer playing their game. And that's a very important and powerful thing to make, especially since you will give the parties more power and legitimacy down ballot in future elections, because November 6th is just the beginning. It is not the end. It is just the beginning of this fight.
Well, let them know, at a minimum, you can't count on my vote no matter what, right? You can count on my vote so long as you do and stand for the things that I believe in. And when they
right
have
on.
Someone who demonstrably doesn't, like Mitt Romney, who doesn't believe in anything except Mitt Romney, go vote for a third party and vote for the one that, you know, adheres most closely to what you believe. Because then the major parties will look and say, holy crap, why did this guy do so good? Well, because he was talking about this stuff. Like, shit, we need to start saying that stuff. But we need to find people who actually believe it, too. You know, it's like when the Democrats started, you know, quoting Bible verses to everyone. We're like, you know, are you fucking serious, man? You know? Even the Democrats were, like, cracking up when they did that, okay? But don't be fooled. Find people who actually believe what you believe. But you got to make your voice heard, because I'm not voting for another rhino in 2016, all right? I'm not voting for a rhino in 2012 either, okay? I voted for my last rhino in 2008. So some of you people, you know, you're still down there bowing at the altar, you know, smoking the pipe
or
whatever. But I'm not doing
No more rhinos. Yeah, no more rhinos. So don't vote rhino. Don't vote for any Democrats. Vote for liberty. And we'll see you at 11 o'clock on Tuesday. This is Tex and Rex signing off.
Flames of liberty will never die. Until next time.